Good evening and welcome to session number 7. So we continue our discussion on the paramitas. We may be able to complete this sub-theme today. There are a few more, I guess, there are 6 more paramitas left. Today's discussion will be on Kanti, Satcha, Adhitthana, Metta, and Upekkha. So let's start with Kanti, the next one. That's number 6. That is Khanti, Kanti. Which is Pali. As usual, you also learn the Sanskrit word. Kshanti. Kanti is Khanti, Kanti, which is Pali, and the Sanskrit word is Ks with the diacritic mark dot underneath S. A long Anti, Kshanti. I think you are more familiar with the word Kshanti. The Sanskrit word. Those who attend yoga classes and from Indian background, you all know that word Shanti. It's also widely used in greetings. You say Om Shanti. So now the general translation of Shanti is patience as a paramita, but in fact a better and the literal meaning is forgiveness. Forgiveness. It's forgiving. You forgive someone. That's called Shanti means. Shanti literally means forgiveness. Patience. Now forgiveness makes more sense given what Shanti is supposed to do in your life as a bodhisattva. So when you come to forgive, and as you know, each paramita is practiced in 3 levels, as you know. The normal level, so intermediate level and advanced level. So when you practice Shanti, or Shanti in your day-to-day life, so your character is forgiving. By nature, so you build up and you maintain a forgiving kind of forgiving character. You always forgive. Now in English, you say forgive and forget, right? So it's very difficult to forget. So that's when patience is the general translation of Shanti, but it doesn't make much sense. So forgiveness makes more sense. Also, it's the correct translation as per Rhys Davids and other Pali scholars. So now on the ordinary level of this paramita, you simply forgive others for others' mistakes. Why? Finally, now this is one. This is yet another difficult paramita. So it's very difficult for us to make up our mind to forgive others. Now, because it's always this paramita, Shanti, forgiveness is considered one of the hardest, given the fact that we have to fight off our ego. We have to get into a battle with our ego to practice this one. Need to fight ego. Now, this is one of the slow paramitas. In other words, you have to take a lot of time to practice this one. It takes a lot of time for you to practice this, and you have to go at on slower space to make sure that why? Because one of the building blocks to this paramita, Shanti is Patigasanya, the sense of resistance. sense of resistance is a building block to this to paramita, because we give any given within any given moment, we may encounter, we may experience a sense of resistance or patigha sanya, patigha patigha sanya, san with diacritical tilde, and so repeat sanya, sanya. And you have learned this word on many times, heard this word, patigha sanya, sense of resistance. Now it's because in day-to-day life, you find it extremely difficult in the true sense of the word to practice kanti or kshanti because of patigha sanya or the sense of resistance. Now, but again, we don't have to worry. Why? You know, at the beginning, we talked about the fact that it takes a bodhisattva or someone aspiring to be the Buddha many eons, probably many millions of years, to practice paramitas. So that is why it takes a bodhisattva. We discussed that on different occasions. It takes you a long time to become the Buddha, because you have to fight. You are in a constant battle with your tendencies, your mental tendencies, your emotions, your thoughts. So that's the real battle is with yourself. So, and there are, most of the time, things happen in our life in a way that experience that we gain from those situations agitate us, provoke us. That's because we find it difficult to practice this paramita. But never to worry, because nobody is able to become the Buddha overnight. There's no enlightenment achieved overnight. That's why it takes a long time, many lifetimes. It involves many lifetimes. Nobody is able to actually figure out how many lifetimes you have to go through to come to achieve a satisfactory level of each and every paramita. So that is the good thing about this. And there's no way to rush into Buddhahood. You can't rush into, because there are some throughout the history, there have been some Buddhist philosophical movements or some schools of thought encouraging people to achieve enlightenment as soon as possible. And also in Sri Lanka also, there's one new religious Buddhist movement. And I'm not going to name it, because this is good. This is a public forum. The founder of that Buddhist movement encourages, he's more like a guru. He encourages his disciples to achieve enlightenment within this lifetime itself. It's okay to try. If I ask you to not try, then I'm wrong. If I ask you to try, but force you to achieve enlightenment within this lifetime, I'll be wrong. If I say to you that don't try within this, you will never achieve it within this lifetime, then I will be wrong again. It's better to try, because when it comes to enlightenment, it involves your past life practice, some samsaric practice. Probably in case you have set a goal of becoming a Samma Sambuddha rather than an Arahat, then and there'll be there cannot be another Samma Sambuddha appearing in the world very very soon. So it involves a lot of things. But however, when you meditate, in your meditation, you always get a nimitta, a signal. You get a signal when you're deep in meditation. You get a signal as to whether you are able to achieve enlightenment this lifetime or not. But what matters is you don't have to be supernatural or superstitious. The best thing is you try your best to achieve enlightenment. In case you fail to do that, don't worry, because then you will have to make up your mind probably I'm not ready to, so I'm not qualified enough. That's the word called. I'm not qualified enough yet to achieve my enlightenment. Probably there's a long way to go, a long way for me to go. Now, one of the most critical, or if there's a certain parameter that we need to pay constant attention to, is none other than this Kanti parameter, Shanti parameter, because of the opposite tendency that always stands against this sense of resistance. Sense of resistance, as you know, is the most subtle form of anger. When you have sense of resistance, you may even smile, you may even laugh, thereby sending a wrong message that that you are impressed with your opponent. In fact, your opponent would be remain in the dark. Then you said that you are smiling and laughing because you like him or her. In fact, you're angry. So sense of resistance is the most subtle form of anger. Even according to the scripture, even if you have meditated all your life, maybe now you are now 100 years old, you are a centenarian, and but you can easily get agitated by something that happens in your life. You don't have to. So we all have a sense of resistance, particular sanya. There's no guarantee. Sometimes sense of resistance occurs to me and it affects me and it goes. Probably, let's say, suppose it happened to me this morning when I was talking to someone, and next week that someone, they come back and say, "Hey Bante, you smiled with me when I raised a question. I felt like you felt uneasy." For example, then I ask, did that happen to me? Probably when I go back and think about that moment, yes, I became defensive. In case I became defensive, meaning I got agitated, I had the power, I had a sense of resistance taking me over, given that moment, and that affects my Kanti paramita, my paramita of forgiveness. Now, always this paramita you start from yourself. That's another fascinating thing. One of the fascinating things about this paramita is you forgive yourself at the first place. So you start forgiving yourself. Otherwise, you can move forward. Because of this, one of the next paramitas that is now this is number six. Number nine, and which is metta, and this one which is kanti, are twin paramitas. They are like twin sisters rather than twin brothers. Why? There's another interesting thing. The higher the spiritual qualities that you practice, grammatically they are conjugated, they are declined in the feminine gender. That's another thing I'm researching on these days. Because you become more refined, the more and more refined, then you become more. So that's one idea in Buddhist psychology. Femininity and masculinity, we take this primarily in terms of sexuality, sexual orientation. But in fact, anyone is a man, is becoming more refined means, in strictly in a spiritual sense, he's becoming more feminine, but it has nothing to do with sexuality or sexual orientation. That's why most of those higher qualities are conjugated or declined, conjugated in considered the feminine gender nouns, and they are conjugated, so they are feminine gender. So because you become refined, maybe that may provoke us to think about why a statue of the Buddha is depicted, made in a way that it looks like in many ways, because a Buddha statue would depict his masculine characteristics, features, but at the same time, so it also showed the feminine qualities. That's because of the spiritual, it has nothing to do with his sexuality. the Buddha's sexual orientation. So sometimes some most statues looks like gender neutral. But when I said that some monks and some scholars were against me, I said, no, I am talking about purely in a psychological sense. I'm talking about in a psychological sense. See, have you seen that the Buddha always depicts both masculine and feminine appearance? It's a mixture of masculine and feminine. It's because, for example, another one is Karuna, compassion. It's a feminine noun. The more refined you become, so that it's more feminine. But some people get offended by that. Unless I, in one of my classes way back in 98, when I had the class, a Buddhist philosophy, psychology class, some people got offended. Then I said, no. Then I got extra time, like another 2 hours extra in the evening. And we continued the class up to into the midnight. And then they got the point. Okay, we got that. So that is how you become more refined. Now, Kanti is one of the paramitas that helps you refine your character. Why? Because we easily get agitated. We get easily get afflicted, and we get affected by patikasanya any moment. Patikasanya can come and attack you any moment. That's one of the subtle patika. When probably next week or so, we will start a totally different sub theme or theme. Probably we'll continue this theme, enlightenment, for maybe a few more months. So because we have to cover a lot of things come to that comes to enlightenment, because the whole point of dedicating the longest time possible for this topic, this theme, is that just to emphasize that enlightenment is not as easy as people think it is. It's extremely difficult. That's why it takes many eons. As I said, Bodhisattva Maitreya started his practice long before Gautama did. Remember, we talked about that hungry tigers, tiger mother, and all that. We talked about that. So, because it's extremely, but never to worry, because of course, now when it comes to, did you remember we talked about how we are able to have a paramita boost? We can boost our paramita all of a sudden, just like Gautama, Bodhisattva Gautama got a paramita boost dana paramita boost when he sacrificed himself to the hungry tiger mother, even before Maitreya hadn't even thought about it. So that is when. So this is yet on your day-to-day life, this is the best paramita for you to get a boost. But however, you have to fight anger and ego. In fact, ego comes from anger too. So then every time. But however, you always, a bodhisattva has to choose between his ego and his bodhicitta. Bodhicitta is mostly Mahayana, but it's a Pali word actually, bodhicitta. The mindset of a bodhisattva. BODHICITTA. Bodhicitta. Chitta is the mind. The mentality, mindset. The mindset of a bodhisattva. And this is the Kanti. Kanti being one of the most difficult to practice, and is the best to practice. Is it the best one to practice in day-to-day life? Why? Because you are, when compared with other paramitas, Kanti gives you the most opportunities, highest number of opportunities on daily basis to practice this. Why? We get constantly agitated. Constant agitation means we go through patikasanya, sense of resistance. We resist. For example, I can very easily get patikasanya, for example, like this. Now, there are a few, if I show you an example. Now, this one, this is pretty new, and it dries perfect. Whereas there are some old ones and dry and no more ink. It's all evaporated. You can't use this. For example, the last time, in fact, I practiced that. I was talking because the recording was going on. At the same time, I was supposed to pay my attention to what I'm saying. The same time, I was running between the whiteboard and the table and picking and trying different pens. And at the same time, that is one thing about I thought about. Then instantaneously, I told myself, "Hey, Upananda, don't get angry." So otherwise, it happened to me when I was a young teacher, for example, like when you're teaching, when I became a Sunday school teacher when I was 16. So I once I remember that there was I was looking for a piece of chalk, and it was a very low quality and cheap brand. I couldn't even every time I pick like few pieces, and then as I tried to write the first character on the blackboard, how if we have whiteboards. So it became so that I crushed it. So I couldn't write even one character on the board, and that is when I got a bunch of them. I just threw them on the floor, and the other students were looking at me, and they were looking at each other. Then I told my students, "Sorry guys, I got patikasanya, meaning sense of resistance." I told the younger ones that day. For example, and then one child, he was that class is it's all 11, 12-year-old boys and girls, 12-year-olds. And then one girl told me in Sinhalese, "Pante, you spoke your heart." He said in Sinhalese, she said, "Pante, you spoke your heart." I said, "Yes, I had to be honest to myself because I got patikasanya. Because none of you asked me what happened to you." So that I expressed myself, and that was comforting. That brought me immediate comfort. And the next time, it didn't happen to me, never. Never happened to me as a teacher again in university, in colleges, in the university, in different countries when I teach. It never happened to me. Why? I played automatically, instant. I just played that experience. That day also, I remember that. I played that experience. I replayed that experience. So that it was a perfect moment, I was maintaining my balance. See, it is such a subtle experience. But that subtle, when you fail to maintain that, it could have a bigger impact on your life. If you can go through that, get through that, then it would give you a boost in your kanti. In case you were unable to do that. So that could affect your mind, affect your behavior, maybe for many more months to come. And you will even feel ashamed why you're not able to do that. But that's why it's always there's a big battle. There's a big battle. Whenever you try to practice this paramita kanti, you have to get into a big battle against ego. Ego means is anger. Ego comes to you because ego, one of the subtle forms. There's no correct one single word for Pali word for ego. It is made of a few things: anger, ignorance, how to say conceit. So how to say over? How to say? What's that? Over. Yeah, the greed and overestimation. So that's this all these words together we call ego. Sorry? It's not at all. Yes, exactly. Not at all. Not at all. So, but how is natural? It is natural when in the Bodhisattva's life also, there have been a lot of failures. When you read the Bodhisattva Gautama's life, he had a lot of failures. But another thing is this kanti. Now this paramita is the feeder paramita for everything else. Feeder, then this is I mean this is another underlying paramita. So we need a bit of this paramita to practice everything else. So you need to, let's say you lose your temper, and so that let's say you are how to say you are in a discussion. And you know better than everyone else. Somehow, someone keep asking you questions, very silly questions. All of a sudden, you get angry. and you lose your kanti, so that everyone would you will get embarrassed by your sudden inappropriate behavior. At that point, you have a good name as a wise man, wise person. Now that you lost your, and then everyone would look at you, and they would get shocked by your behavior. Now, what happens was, your wisdom paramita, and it's going to panya, it was affected by your anger, because the absence of kanti so affected your wisdom then. So this underlies, this runs through kanti paramita, runs through every other paramita. So that is so. But however, if there's a paramita which is the most difficult, and at the same time gives you the most highest number of opportunities practice, it is none other than this one, Kanti. And this is, you have an abundance of opportunities to practice in your day-to-day life. So, and again, we start this one from ourselves. And this is also used as a counseling technique for those who live in denial. People who hate themselves, they live in denial. They hate themselves. Self-hate is the worst form of hate. So when you hate yourself, nobody can help you. Why? Because you are not ready to accept yourself. Self-acceptance is very hard when you live in denial, and so that you have to forgive yourself at the first place. Forgiving, you have to be forgiving, Kanti. So that's why I always consider, I see, forgiveness is the better translation of Kanti than patience. Patience is a very ambiguous term. So Rhys Davids, whom I respect the most, he has so far given the most correct translations. Rhys Davids. Dr. Rhys Davids. So his translation is always accurate, and there have been some other translators who have distorted kind of. No, you can, when you refine the translations too much, you can come up with like a candy, sugar-coated Buddhism, sugar-coated Dhamma. So some scholars, they explain, they use like fancy terms to explain. This is good for this. This is the new age type of spirituality. Sometimes when you walk into a bookstore, there's a self-help section. Let's say I always, whenever I go to a bookstore, I will just go to a self-help, books written by popular scholars. They are all very nice language. It's like you are eating one of the American girls. She's now 17. Because she's very intelligent. Once she told me, having been to a bookstore, and she, Bhante, I was going to buy some books, self-help books, but I didn't like that they were all popcorn books. You can keep a basket full of popcorn while watching the movie, but you never feel your tummy. Right? You only taste it. Actually, it's not the taste that you enjoy, but the smell when you eat popcorn. It's the smell. You smell it. It smells so good that you keep swallow. I mean, just eating them. So it's like that. So forgiveness is the best one, and this is my signature paramita in my daily life. Signature paramita. You have your brand. So this is my signature paramita. I practice this in day-to-day life, because when I was a child, I used to be very hot-tempered. Very hot-tempered. One day when I was going to school, I hit my foot against so against a tree, sorry, against a stone, a rock. It actually feels the rocky ground. So what happens? I injured myself. I went back. I didn't go to school that day. So I went into my I went back to my home. And then I picked a crowbar, and then I so that I kept digging, and then removed the whole piece of stone there. I was so angry. and then I even injured myself. So I was doing like this. I was very well known in my area when I was like 7 years, 8 year old child for my hot temper. But since I went to the monastery when I was 13 and a half, there were a few instances I burst in. I got really angry, but not an outburst. But later, that's when my teacher told me, that time I wasn't a monk yet, but my teacher, who is a good psychologist, he told me, if you feel like if there are going to be an outburst of anger, let it happen. If you feel like crying, cry. Let yourself cry. It's because sometimes you need to let go of all those negative pressure in your mind. So that's why always, sometimes in spiritual life, people say it's not good to cry, lament, but I do that otherwise. I always, if you feel like crying, do that. Because otherwise it can negatively affect your neurology, your neurons. So that's how I was when I was a kid. So that is when my teacher recommended that, it's not going to work in your life. You wouldn't be a good monk when you always get angry. So Kanti, that is your signature paramita, he told me. So ever since it has become my signature paramita, Kanti. But there were times that I couldn't stand my own anger, my own patikasanya. That is when I talked to myself and took a deep drink, a lot of water, and go to a quiet place, sunyagara, a place of solitude, and would meditate for hours. So to convince myself, it takes you longer to convince yourself than others that you are not angry anymore. See, that's one of the trickiest things. I'm talking from my experience. Sometimes very difficult to convince you that you are not angry. When you feel like trembling, anger, and you run to the mirror and see, okay, your face has changed, and you, let's say, then you try your best to smile. The more you try to smile, others know that you're angry. So that you find it difficult to hide your expressions. So Kanti, and all, so that is, I went, because Kanti is often practice together with metta. So that's when always these two words occur at the same place as a pair of words, kanti, as more like one word, kanti metta, kanti and metta together. I will later explain metta, because I have two. Metta is the number 9, and so this is number 6. Because for now, I'll just stop by saying that Kanti and Metta are supposed to be to be practiced at the same time. So for now, I'll say Kanti is forgiveness. It is part of your attitude. It is your outlook on life. Kanti is your outlook, and you have to put it into practice in your day-to-day life. By starting for by forgiving yourself at the first, and then forgiving others, and that involves metta. Just to conclude here, Kanti is forgiveness, which is a tendency that we are supposed to practice. It is an innate tendency. We were born with that, and when we practice forgiveness into metta, into practice. It is metta that we practice. So, you can practice Kanti and metta at the same time, because these two are inseparable. Kanti and metta are inseparably interconnected. That you practice Kanti means at the same time you practice metta and vice versa. That being said, let's move to the next one.
Is there a specific sutra on Kanti?
Actually, it is. There are some mentioned in the Anguttara Nikaya, different places. Anguttara Nikaya, and most of the time, it occurs in different sutras. Kanti, like for metta, there are separate sutras for a few sutras for metta, Why? Because metta is something that we have to put into practice. But kanti is the basic requirement for metta. Unless we have kanti, we wouldn't be able to practice metta. So kanti is our overall outlook. And so that we put our kanti into practice means we do metta. So that's the kind of, so that's the kanti and metta always go together. Kanti, metta. And it is considered kanti metta bala. That's your power. When you practice kanti and metta at the same time, and that becomes your might. Bala means might. Bala, 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 might. And we will talk about that more in our discussion on metta. Now the next one is number seven, is Satcha. Satcha. So, sorry, I would just say, did I say kanti and metta bala? There's a mention of kanti bala also. Kanti bala means strength of forgiveness. Kanti bala, Khanti, BALA bala. Kanti bala, BALA. Kanti bala. Bala means might. Kanti bala. It's the opposite of the might of emperors, like kings. Anger is their bala. Kings are always angry. They don't have kanti. So that's how Buddha, in some way, I don't remember the exact reference where it occurs in the sutras. They say that, this is when. Devas and Yakkhas. Deva, Deva, that is divine beings. Yakkha, 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 like demons, both are divine. Now, Devas have positive divine power. Yakkhas have a negative divine power. They are negative beings. The more angry they are, they are more mighty. They become more mighty. Whereas in the case of Devas, in case they get angry, they would fall from their divinity. See, in a lot of religions and literature talks about angry Devas, angry gods, but not in Buddhism. A Deva is not supposed to get angry, then he would fall from his divinity. That's one thing in Buddhism. Devas never get, they are not supposed to get angry. If they do, they would fall from their even Mara. We're gonna have a whole maybe two, three sessions on Mara in the future. Mara is, there are five Maras we talk about in Buddhism. So in the Buddhist literature, Mara is only the person, the person called Mara. Everything else part of our selfhood. So even the Mara, who is supposed to be living in the sixth sensual heaven, Paramimittavasavarti. He has so much power. His duty is to, he's the king himself. His duty is to tempt spiritual people, distract spiritual people, so that he can put spiritual people, distract spiritual people from their spirituality, and so that they would go back to sensual pleasures. That's how the Mara is happy. Now, even the Mara, he doesn't get angry. He would try his best to tempt you, like he did in the case of the Buddha. Never did he get angry. Why? He's a divine being. In case he got angry, he would have fallen from his divinity right away, and that would be end of his divine life. Whereas Yakkhas, and there are some other divine and semi-divine beings, they are negative beings. Yakkhas are divine beings. So always when I talk about gang violence and police involvement in California, I always use Yakkha and Deva. Nobody, sometimes some people, the police are not Devas. I say no, when you compare with Maras, Yakkhas, they are better. They had a positive power. So their authority, their might is positive. Whereas the negative, so a gang member, a gangster could be negative. They had a lot of power, a lot of authority in the society, but his power is negative. Negative bala. A gangster is led by, always motivated by negative valor, whereas the police is always, in general, how to say, motivated by positive power, because you have legal authority, legal enforcement. It's a different story that they also become yakkas sometimes. But then what happens? They fall, they get fired, and they go to jail, right? So divine beings, that's the one instant according to Buddhist spirituality. So Mara, even the Mara, he doesn't get angry. When he failed to tempt a Buddha, he never got angry. If he did, and he would be gone, because he's divine. Now, and then we apply that on the human level. Now, ideally, a monkey is not supposed to get angry. Of course, monks get angry. Sometimes they get angry more than lay people do. I have come across worst case scenarios in monastics, so I have to do the justice, because I always describe everything in a psychological sense, not in a cultural or a spiritual sense, purely psychological. Finally, to the end of the day, we are human beings struggling with our own emotions. Now, Kanti use there's a Kanti Bala, strength of focus. Start it with yourself. Kanti Bala, or strength of forgiveness, you start with yourself. And it is a rare quality. It's a very rare quality. And next we're going to say the Satcha. Number seven is Satcha. That is SACCA, Satcha. SACCA, Satcha, which is Pali. And SATYA, Satya, which is Sanskrit. Satcha, Satya. This is number seven, Satcha. That is Satcha literally. Satcha or Satya literally means real, true. Now, you can better understand this paramita in light of this term. SACCA, Satcha dash KIRIYA, Satcha Kiriya. Kiriya literally means action. Kiriya. Satcha Kiriya in general English called solemn, so solemn affirmation. Solemn affirmation. So affirmation means affirmation of truth, affirmation of truthfulness. Now, you have been truthful, so that you use that truth. For example, Satchakiriya is also, and also it's called affirmation or asseveration too. Asseveration. ASSEVERATION. Asseveration or affirmation. Now, Satchakiriya is that testing your truthfulness. For example, now, I did some Satchakiriya. I had some research on this one, on Satchakiriya, with a group of police officers, crime investigators in Florida. Because when some criminals were put on lie detector, in case the law enforcement people think that you are lying, and so that legally a judge might put you on a lie detector. So I have seen that when people, in case people lie, so it's almost like Richter scale that measures earthquakes. So in case you lie, so all of a sudden you see it get marked when, so when it runs, when you can see on the screen, and it get marked by blue or red, I guess. So lie detector can see whether it can pick on your negative emotions, your anxiety. It picks your anxiety. When you lie, your facial expressions don't show that you are lying. Sometimes there are, you can, as a criminal, you can get training by criminals. California, USC, house, home for everything, right? You can get a training for to face the lie detector. But it's very rare that someone can manipulate the lie detector. So we did some research on Satyakirya. So, and that is when you are truthful to yourself, probably there are a lot of allegations against you. Probably there are a lot of fabrications against you. However, when you do Satyakirya, but you never committed that crime. So it's a different story that people go to jail for mistaken identity. But it rarely happens nowadays thanks to technology. People can, authority, the judge can order, can ask, put a criminal or a wrongdoer on the lie detector. And we had a lot of discussions on this one, Satyakirya. When you are truthful to yourself, and so you don't have to worry about that, because you are honest to yourself, Satyakirya. Now this is Satyakirya. This is the more silent paramita. This is a silent paramita. Silent means you practice this in silence. When, as a bodhisattva, when you do this practice, you have a, now, as average ordinary people, we have perfect right to defend ourselves. Defend ourselves. We have to talk. We have to get the. We have to prove that we are innocent, right? So that is what we do in being truthful. Whereas, as a paramita, you don't struggle to prove yourself. You simply keep the truth to yourself. You don't try to. Why? Because bodhisattvas never try to prove themselves. They simply remain happy that they didn't commit any crime or thing. Why is that? If they struggle to prove themselves, they would fall. That would bring them. That would make them anxious. And so that ego, because they are not egoistic, they are, so that they wouldn't let the ego come take over. That bodhisattvas, they don't try to prove themselves, they simply stick to themselves. Sometimes there are some stories that, some Jataka stories. Now, bodhisattva, it cost them his life, but bodhisattva wouldn't speak. He wouldn't speak, he wouldn't say a word. Now, as tactics, so when you practice such a paramita, most of the time you at the same time you practice silence. There's one spiritual practice called MONEYYA. Two words, maybe you can put dash. MONEYYA, Monaya, dash or without dash, VATA, water. Water. Water, Monaya, water. Sanskrit word is vruta. VR with diacritic mark dot underneath RTA, vruta. Water, vruta. Monaya, water, the vow of silence. Vow of silence. Now, and there was one monk in the Buddha's assembly also. And that monk, he made a resolution many lifetimes ago that he would be the first, the best one to be identified by the Buddha as the best example of Monaiyavata, who practice vow of silence. Nowadays, even today, it's a pre-Buddhist practice. Monaiya is the vow of silence, silent saints, Monaiyavata. And Buddha also approved that, Monaiyavata, Monaiya. It comes from Monaiya, it's the compound. It's the compound of the noun, compound noun of Muni. Muni literally means silent. Muni. And in Sanskrit, and sometimes you say, people say that all his time, and it was a big academic conference. Academics were arguing with each other, debating with each other. that particular professor, he remained a muni at all times. Muni means he was simply observing everything, but he didn't speak. Muni. And Buddha is also identified as Muni. So all the Munis. And Muni is synonymous with Buddha, anyone who is enlightened. So when you understand things, you don't have to say things, right? I always define Muni in terms of that, you know, classical English saying that empty vessel makes noise. Empty vessel makes noise. The more truthful you you become, along the Bodhisattva track, you speak less. I have come with these two people, those who are truthful and those who never committed any crime, any wrongdoing. They either go extra miles to prove themselves, writing a lot of reports and stuff, which is correct too. Or there's another choice. You may simply ignore and just remain silent, keep silent. Both are correct. But I can say that it's ethical, you have a right to prove yourself when you are truthful. Now, you may either go completely silent or become completely expressive, and you can prove yourself. It's up to you. But Bodhisattva, in the case of Bodhisattvas, being an average man, I would rather try to, when everyone accuses me for something that I never did, I would speak up, right? I would speak up. Whereas if all of a sudden, if I remember myself to be a Bodhisattva, Upananda, don't do that anymore. Go silent. Sometimes people do both, or you can do either. However, as a Bodhisattva, if you practice such as truthfulness as a paramita, you have to practice silence as frequently as possible. Otherwise, you may get into trouble with other people. When you know too many people, and that drains your energy. Actually, in the long run, it affects your personality. However, you have a right to argue. And that Buddha also accepted that. And Buddha said that whenever a certain monk committed any wrongdoings, and other monks would report it to the Buddha right away. It is full of, in the Vinaya, the Buddhist, the monastic, so the basket to Buddhist monastic code of conduct, the Vinaya is full of such stories. And Buddha mandated that within the community, when a certain monk commits any wrong, and it should be brought to the notice of other monks, or if the Buddha was there, to the notice of the Buddha. That's in good faith. That's another negative. They don't speak at all because, exactly, wonderful, yeah. That's because if they open up, so that would be the end of their life, because they are no support. That's why they always say that, I wouldn't talk to you. Especially in law enforcement circles, I noticed that. I know one senior police officer in Florida told me, he got so angry in his head, he shot that criminal like a million times. Because the criminal wouldn't speak. Especially the lawyers, don't talk to the officers. Be silent. And judges also. Because silence is guaranteed by the Constitution too. Silence is part of your right. So the freedom of expression also means freedom of silence too. That's the other side of freedom of expression. Yeah. So criminals also don't talk. That's because lest the law enforcement officers know they are criminal crimes that they committed. So satchakiriya is what we do in our day-to-day life to see how far we have practiced such a paramita, truthfulness. But most of the time, if you are a Bodhisattva, instead of expressions, you keep you practice, you remain silent. That doesn't mean you have to talk, actually. In one of the in earliest in his earliest time of earliest years, earliest time of the Bodhisattva life, in one word, Bodhisattva. He had just yet, it hasn't been that long since he became a Bodhisattva. In one of his lifetimes, he was an ascetic living in a forest, and he used to visit the royal palace. So he was very young. So he used to have psychic powers, and he would always enter the royal palace from the balcony. He would use his psychic powers to enter. It's one of the most fascinating stories that I ever read in Bodhisattva life. One day, and then the king would be always out doing his affairs, and then the queen would be home all the time. And it would be the queen who would prepare the meal for the ascetic himself herself. So that one day he came, and so that they got an intimate dialogue. They made love, and then he lost his psychic ability, and he kept waiting for the king to arrive. And so that he went to the king and said, "Your Majesty, I committed this crime. I made love with your queen." So that he had to be truthful, and please punish me, whatever you would like to do. And the king was so kind, and he said, "No, you have been my mentor for many years. So that you have been truthful, I will let you go. Please don't do that yourself. Behave with, and don't forget to come again. Since tomorrow, come back as though nothing happened." And the Bodhisattva would come, and then he would come back to the palace, and he kept coming. So that he was being truthful, that gave him that saved him. That is one of the most fascinating. When I heard the story, when I was like 17-year-old monk, so that I didn't know that I got my eyes tearful. And then my teacher asked me why. I said, you know, how honest, how truthful the Bodhisattva was. So that the Bodhisattva was, and it happened according to later years, later lifetimes of Bodhisattva, because we cannot say years of Bodhisattva, lifetimes. Later lifetimes of his Bodhisattva, he never committed such things, but this was in the primary level of Bodhisattva. See how difficult it is for a Bodhisattva to control desires. But that is one of the, most of the time, most scholars, most teachers don't use that moment as an example for such a paramita, but I do. I love that one, because that really tells a lot. That he sees truthfulness. And he was waiting, he didn't leave the palace. He kept waiting for the king to arrive. And he went then, and he paid his respect, and the king was shocked. No, you are my mentor. Please don't do that again. And then he, in fact, he never thought about, he didn't even mention his queen. He didn't put the blame on the queen. He didn't put the blame on the Bodhisattva. And he simply said that he only talked about the well-being of the Bodhisattva. The king was so intelligent. You need to take care of yourself, and please don't stop coming. Please come as usual. See how, and it gave him, and that is also the boost of Satchaparami for him, himself, Satchaparamita. So I always, that always haunts my mind whenever I think about this paramita, Satcha. How truthful we can be. So that is one of the reasons why every fortnight, fully ordained monks, bhikkhus, they get together in, and we do that, we don't have a Sima hall or the specific purpose. And once in a while, we get together in shrine hall, and we talk to each other. The kind of wrongdoings we did is more almost like a confessional then. Like a confessional. That's called Uposatha Kamma. Uposatha Kamma, full moons. That's because we have to be truthful. So, and that is when, that is how the sasana. Sasana can exist, the Buddha's dispensation can exist. Otherwise, when everyone commits wrong, everyone becomes wrong, almost everyone becomes a wrongdoer, and they don't become truthful, and the sasana would decline. So the life of the sasana depends on the truthfulness of individual members of the sangha. And also, when a monk I remember that sometimes when I made some mistakes in my life, and so that I apologize to the people. Always, my teacher always trained me in case as a monk, when you do something unfair to people, they always go and apologize to them. Why? Be that is part of apology. Apologies play a very important role in the practice of such a paramita. When if we try to justify, if I try to justify my inability to apologize, so and that would affect my Satyaparamita. Why? Then I am talking out of my ego. Then I become egocentric, not Satya-centric. So I'm then that at that point, to that effect, I am not Paramita-centric. So I'm not only so, and that's one thing, Satyaparamita. Now, and Satyaparamita always goes with Adhiṭṭhāna Paramita, the next one. Adhiṭṭhāna is the next one. So that is number 8, Adhiṭṭhāna. That is Adhiṭṭhi TT dot diacritical mark dot underneath each T, HA long ANA, ADHITTHA long ANA, Adhiṭṭhāna, Adhiṭṭhāna. Satcha and Adhiṭṭhāna, they're also considered twin paramitas. You practice Satcha and Adhiṭṭhāna together. See, at the beginning we discussed that all these you can practice these all these paramitas are inseparable. Most paramitas you at the same way. If you are mindful enough, you can based on one situation, out of one situation, you could practice few paramitas at the same time. But we need to be very we had we, we had to be very sharp. We need to be very mindful of that. Now, let's say what Adhiṭṭhāna means. As again, Satcha is combined with practice. You practice Satcha combined with Adhiṭṭhāna. Now, Adhiṭṭhāna, is it okay if I erase this? Adhiṭṭhāna. I'm left-handed. And I have been going through this nerve entrapment things. I've been suffering, but every time I read, I have a lot of Adhiṭṭhāna to write, because I'm right left-handed. There's no choice, but I have to still write with my right left hand despite the pain. So that's my little Adhiṭṭhāna. Right. So Adhiṭṭhāna. Let's look at the etymology. That's Adi. That's E. D H I Adi S T H A. Adi is a prefix. Sta is the root. Adi plus sta. Sta means to stand. Sta means stand. Now, remember, you are familiar with this word, sthana, thana, sthana and thana. So stha is a Sanskrit word. For of course, all the roots are given in Sanskrit language, even in Pali language, because that's the mother language. So Adhi, sorry, I had to put the bridge. Adhi. Adhi plus Stha, Adhi plus tha. Stha means to stand. That's the root. Adi here means on, stand on. So Adhiṭṭhāna means standing on Adhiṭṭhāna. Like in English, say stand your grounds. Stand your grounds. It's more like an American thing. Always stick to your gun and stand. So stand your ground. They always say that. Maybe it's a different purpose. So Adhisthana is standing on. Now, Sthana is Sanskrit. Thana, T-H-A-N-A. Thana is the Pali word. So that's why Adhi plus Tha becomes Adhisthana. That's the word. In Sanskrit, it is Adhisthana. See the difference? Adhisthana. A-D-H-I. Adhisthana. Adhisthana is Sanskrit. Adhisthana is Pali. So, sthana. Sthana or thana means place. Like so Hindustan, Pakistan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan. So that's a Sanskrit, how to say, Persian word. Sanskrit Persian word than. So the sthana means the place. So for example, place of Tajiks, Tajikistan. So Hindustan, sthan of the place of Hindus. So it's a Sanskrit word. So the Western parallel is land, England, Finland. So recently, one of the British linguists told me. So there's another word here too, like Acton and all these. I'm still researching on that. Ton, T-O-N, ton. The word end in ton, T-O-N. That also means, that also has a connection with the Sanskrit word tan, Wellington, Paddington. So, yes. Town, and the town has come again from Sanskrit too. So that's it's not my idea. Well, I'm still researching on that. Actually, that professor asked me to find some resources from Sanskrit and Pali because he's trying to write a paper on that. So I look forward to reading his research paper on that. So now again, I think I went too far. That's okay. It's always good to these extra things. More interesting. Now. Thana, Adhisthana, Sanskrit, Adhisthana, Pali. So, Aditta means to stand on. Now, the common translation, general translation of Adhisthana, which literally means to stand on, is resolution. Resolution, determination. Determination, or when you say you are determined. So, that is Adhisthana, resolution. Now, when an organization or a society passes a resolution, right? You pass a resolution means it is part of your policy and you create some grounds on which you are supposed to act continually. That is what resolution means. Resolution is grounds on which you will continually act, which becomes your policy thereafter. So that's when, that in that sense, that Adhisthana is translated as a resolution. So you create grounds. Resolution means to create grounds to stand on for you to continue. Resolution. So Adhisthana is the resolution, or at times is translated determination too. But resolution is a better word. So always Satcha and Adhisthana go together. Satcha Parami. It's always combined with Satcha and Adhisthana. Now, what is the combination? What is the connection, excuse me, between Satcha and Adhisthana? Now, when you are truthful, you are not supposed to fall emotionally. You have to stand your grounds because you are innocent. You maintain your innocence in case others accuse you of doing something wrong, committing a crime or so. So that you need Adhisthana to stand your grounds. That's when always the Satcha and Adhisthana practice the combined. So that is how I was taught by my teacher too. When you are innocent, when you maintain your innocence, actually something happened also sometimes in the monastic school. That day I was matched up. So some students were jealous of me, so that they accused me a lot of things and say that it happens among students, youngsters. So and then they that I suddenly is the teacher's character in the teacher's absence. But I always maintained. One time I was very sad when I went back to the monastery. I was crying over and my teacher approached me and he interviewed me and said that if you didn't do that, why cry? Stick to your practice your adhidhana. That's the best, that is the earliest and the best moment, best example that I learned that adhidhana and satya go together. Because unless you use adhidhana, you wouldn't be able to maintain emotional stability. We need that satya. When you are a truthful person, be determined to maintain your innocence. So in criminal counseling that we has when we have Buddhist, how to say, Buddhist sessions, they call that, that's how the law enforcement, they call the Buddhist sessions. Buddhist sessions are conducted by a Buddhist for criminal counseling behavior, counseling training with police officers and law enforcement. I even go teach them these Pali words, Adhidhana and so the Satcha. So maintain your innocence. In order to maintain, so we need to the word maintain, to maintain implies your grounds, your adhidhana. In order to maintain, maintenance is to maintain, so it is continuous until proven innocent. So I have in a lot of people who have who went to jail for mistaken identity. Mistaken identity back in the day, some people, I know those stories that some people were thrown behind bars without parole for many years because they failed to pay child support. But later, when the DNA testing was introduced, DNA proved that one of my friends in Chicago that he wasn't the biological father of that child. He was like a good 11 years, and then so he chose not to sue. Not to sue the woman. So then what happened? So he's a Buddhist. And his grandma, who was still alive, and he even hired a lawyer and said, okay, you need to sue that woman and get a compensation because you lost 11, good 11 years, precious years of his life. But he told me, and then he told me, he used to, after, when he got, because I met him in the jail. So that is when he had already forgiven. Forgiven whomsoever put him in jail. He even forgave the judge and the jury and everything. So that's at that point he practiced three actually, Satcha, Adhidhana, and what's that? Kanti. Kanti. He practiced three paramitas at the same time. Now he's a counselor himself. He got his name cleared. Now, and he told me once when I taught him the paramita boost that he hadn't heard about before, and he was so happy. He even cried, he broke down in tears and said that I forgive. First, I forgive myself. Why? I never committed that. I never, because I did, yes, I didn't, I was unable to pay child support because I wasn't the father. I wasn't the father, but somehow the judge asked me to pay because I failed. I was very adamant that I wasn't the father. So finally, when he was done, the DNA test proved that he wasn't the biological father. We had to go along. We had to hire another team of lawyers to open the case again, and he had to get move the higher court, the high court. So ended up in the Supreme Court. So the Supreme Court, in their word, the Supreme Court said that this man was innocent. That's when he was happy. Then I asked, but I just want to tell him in good faith, why not sue? Because no, Bhante, if I sue, then it would destroy my inner peace. I never want to do that. Anyway, it involves a child. And since I decided not to sue, and then that child became much closer to me than her biological mother. I was simply her boyfriend. He didn't have a husband that time. She had already divorced. So that's why in day-to-day life, paramita, the whole point here is We practice all this in there's no separate spiritual landscape for us to practice paramitas. Always we use real life situations for us to practice paramita. So in that sense, that's why the Buddha's teaching is Buddha Dhamma is called a way rather than a religion or a philosophy. So you live your way, own way, but that's making sure that you don't do any harm to yourself and others. So that's Adhisthana. I think we should be able to finish the next one also quickly today, so that we can start another theme the next week. We have 7 more minutes left. Then the last one is Metta. That's M-E-T-T-A, no, two more left, Metta. M-E-T-T-A, Metta. Metta, so it should be enough time. But again, I shouldn't get anxious, right? I told at the very beginning that we should slow down and go. See, I'm telling myself, again, I'm re-educating myself. Upananda, don't rush. Okay, so let's try. Next one. Metta. In a way, it's better to discuss Upekkha next week. It will take the whole class time next week to discuss Upekkha. It's a big topic. So Metta. I think most of us, we know what Metta is already. It comes from the Sanskrit word Mitra, M-I-T-R-A, Mitra. Mitra. Mitra is the Sanskrit word. Pali word is Mitta. M-I-T-T-A, Mitta. M-I-T-R, it comes from Sanskrit word Mitra. Now, so Mitra, Mitta, Metta. Now, usually, whenever we hear the word Mitta, it means to us loving kindness, unconditional love. Now, metta literally means action of a friend. Action of a friend. Action of friend. That's what metta means. Metta is the whole process of behavior. So as a friend, what you do, your action as a friend is called metta. So metta then literally means action of a friend. Be yourself or your friend, Mitta. Now, and Metta. Now, Metta Paramita is often understood with another term, M-E-T-T-A, Metta, T-T-A, long A, dash, H A V I H A long A R A Vihar. V I H A R A Vihar. Metta Vihara can be two words or one word. Usually, as a compounded noun, as a compound is a one word. Metta Vihara. It is one of the four divine abidings. Four divine abidings. That is yet another favorite topic that our the people, the local British community coming for meditation, they always ask for Metta Vihara, the four divine abidings. So the Metta Vihara, if you, the easiest way to understand Metta Paramita is that you live the life of a friend to yourself and others. That's called Metta. Vihara means abiding, abode, living. Vihara. Vihara is to live. And that is one of the four Brahma Viharas, B-R-A-H, M-A, Brahma Viharas. Now, hereafter we may always think about, when we hear the word Metta, we say, okay, action of a friend, Metta. First you become a friend, become friendly to yourself. Now, if you hate yourself, then you are your own enemy. So we start this practice, Paramita, from yourself, ourselves. First, we become a friend to ourselves so that we know the value. As you always hear in guided metta meditation, you always see that. Be friendly to yourself. Take care of yourself first. Self-care is the best. when you take care of yourself happily, then you know the value of friendship, love. And so unconditional love is also understood in terms of unconditional love, because there cannot be any conditions put forward when you practice metta. The most unfortunate thing in the world that people love themselves also conditionally. It's like the head of a snake. Snake, the head is telling the tail, and you have to obey me. And tell the tail is said that without me, you are nothing. So you have to obey me. And there's also the constant fight between head and the tail of the same snake. That is some funny analogy that my teacher told me. So that you get into trouble, you fight with yourself. And as a result, you live in self-hatred, you hate yourself. So that we start metta from yourself. You become a friend to yourself first. And then, so the action of a friend or metta is such that even if people in your inner circle or involved in your life are not friendly with you, you still consider them a friend, which is the heart, that is the critical part of metta paramita. See, that is why a lot of people have told me, Bhante, I have difficulty doing metta to my opponents. Then I would say, don't worry, metta is not a simple practice, it is a paramita. It's a paramita. It takes, just like any other just in the case of any other paramita, it takes you a lifetime, many lifetimes to come to a satisfactory level of metta. Sometimes you wouldn't be able to practice metta paramita for others, but at least be a friend to yourself. Like, be a friend unto yourself, like in classical English you say, be a friend unto yourself. So metta. So that is, and that's again, that's one of the four Brahma Viharas. In Brahma is the divinity, right? One of the four divine abodes. Now Buddha lived in a society where spirituality, mainstream spirituality, was connected to Brahman. Now the Buddha, metta wasn't, there was no vertical connection with the Brahman. Instead, to him, metta was kind of horizontal. It's in the name of relationships, because you need to live your life happily, so that you are always in a relationship with someone. So you need to be, you have to be very metta. So now metta is, I think once the Dalai Lama or someone said that metta is all about eco-friendly living. Eco-friendly living. You have to harmonize with everyone else in your surroundings, known, unknown, so favorite people, opponents, neutral people, or people who are indifferent to you. With the nature, you have to be metta. So that being said, thank you. Our time is up. Thank you very much for coming today, and take the best care of yourself. See you next week.